What direction is the market headed? Plus, more on Jerry's gold outlook. This is Jerry Tumas Smart Money, a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services with Cornerstone President and Founder, Jerry Tuma. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member, FINRA, and SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services and Independent Financial Group, LLC, are unaffiliated entities. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station, or its management, or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. We are here to talk about your finances, investments, and the economy, and we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.
Welcome to Smart Money with Jerry Tuma. This is Michael Williams. Jerry, the market's definitely trying to keep us on edge. Not really wanting to tell us if it's going to go up, if it's going to go down. We've got, you know, our research that we do and our own in-house stuff we look at. You know, it looks like there could still be an uptrend in place, that this could be a correction, but there's a lot of signs that this may not bounce.
It's looking less and less like this is just a correction. We'll see. Two key pieces of information on that one. If you look at the 200-day moving average, that's, if you don't know how those work, you take the price of whatever your stock is, or you can do it on gold or whatever, but the 200-day moving average of the closing prices, in this case, we're going to talk about NASDAQ and the S&P 500, and NASDAQ has not only broken the 200-day moving average to the downside, it's quite a bit below there. I don't remember off the top. I didn't sit in and calculate it this morning, but I'm guessing 5% or maybe 7% below the 200-day moving average. And so the way these things work, think of it kind of like it's a trend direction identifier, if you want to call it that. So when you're in a bear market, your 200-day moving average is higher than the price of whatever you're measuring. So essentially, it's kind of like, okay, the price, because 200 days of pricing is in there. And
right.
So
you're below average right now.
Right. And so what happens, you throw the oldest day out and put the new day in and recalculate it every day. Mm-hmm. And so right now, you're fairly significantly below the 200-day moving average for NASDAQ, and you're moving below it on the S&P as we speak. So that, yeah, doesn't mean it's a bear market, but that means it's leaning a lot more toward being a bear market. The latest stats from the government, you know, the Atlanta Fed, which was projecting an uptrend in the economy on their now GDP number, the latest is we're seeing they're estimating Q1 at a negative 2.4%.
So they're saying our current Q1 in 2025,
right,
they're estimating at negative 2.4% GDP.
Right, which is, if that happens for two consecutive calendar quarters, that's the definition of a recession right there. So we know that the California wildfires have had something to do that. We know that the severe winter weather has something to do that. But one of the analysts with Alpine Macro made the statement. They said, look, what we see, the way this looks right now, is there's trouble brewing below the surface, because what's really happening with the unemployment rate numbers don't reflect a lot of layoffs yet, but there's a lag time, and there's a lot of pressure with the DOGE, and there's going to be a lot of government layoffs, and then that's going to impact other people, because as we talked about before, I think last week, you could affect as many as two other jobs. Somebody loses their job, what are they going to, are they going to be able to keep their house or not? They buy a few groceries, they're not going to buy new cars. So if somebody loses their job, the economic ripples from that spread far and wide.
Well, and you also got not just the government layoffs, but the government reduction in spending.
Yep.
You got a bunch of companies that their whole business is based on government spending. So they're going to have to lay off people.
It is. And the tariffs are disrupting just about everything. So the bottom line right now is stocks are, on the one hand, pessimistic. So, again, Ned Davis is got a chart, and they said, you know, usually when you get to the point where this many people, and they're measuring the sentiment, they're measuring how negative people are about the market, when it gets to the levels it's at now, that usually is a sign of a short-term bottom. That may very well be the case. We'll see. At this point, there just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of risk-taking stepping up to the plate when we're in a weak position right now. So I don't think we've seen the end of the ramifications from the tariff war that's starting. It does look like Trump is heck or high water. He's just going to do it. And I was hoping originally, and I think a lot of people were in the same boat, hoping he would just kind of soft pedal that for a little while and then pick it up later let's get through the transition phase in the economy and the presidential staff and all that stuff, as opposed to just, you know, getting your sledgehammer out and bashing everything from day one. But that's not his style.
Yeah, it's way more style to go bashing.
Not his style. The problem is he may be, you know, biting off more than he can chew economically here, because if we start, once the economic momentum shifts one way or the other, if you go from, you've got the economic momentum coming up when you're starting a new recovery in the economy and you're entering a new bull market at that point, then it becomes a self-reinforcing momentum. People see, hey, jobs are adding, market's going up, things are good, so more people, this is like lemmings, they copy each other, you know, they copy people. When the economy's the other way around and you're starting to roll over like we are right now, when you go from, now, the Vanita with Alpine Macro, I don't have her name right in front of me, but anyway, their chief economist is still saying she thinks GDP could be 1% to 1.5% this year, growth, but that's down from 2.5%, which was their projection 2 weeks ago. So the situation is evolving very rapidly. Reminds me of the old statement for those of you that are longtime Texans like me. If you don't like the weather in Texas, stick around just for a few moments. It's going to change. So this is changing at a more rapid pace than really I can ever remember. In the stock market right now, we're showing signs of what I would call extreme pessimism. Again, I'm still working on a newsletter, and I hope someday I'll finish it. It's like, okay, the newsletter that never ends. Why? Because the situation changes every day. And so every day there's something new to go in there. Wait a minute, I was going to say this. Now I got to change it to that because the situation changes. It looks more and more likely, and I reserve the right to change my opinion later, more and more likely that we're having what I would call a cyclical top in place for the market. Cyclical, secular, two different terms. A cyclical top simply means in this business cycle, we may have hit the top for the market. A secular top in the market means one that lasts for a decade or longer. I'm skeptical about that. I don't think that's the situation that we're in right now. I think that's more for the next decade. We'll probably have another secular top, but you never know for sure. So it's looking more to me like we're sitting on a cyclical top in the market, or we have one already. I mean, if we look at the normal criteria that you look at for when the market looks toppy for the, you know, for at least a cycle, in other words, the business cycle for a year or 2 years, you know, we've had extreme margin debt. We've had extremely overvalued stocks, not as extreme as some other examples. Historically speaking, post-election choppiness is kind of normal in a presidential election, but I would challenge you to say anything about what this president is doing is normal right now. Right. I've never seen anything like it, and most people haven't either. Matter of fact, one of our analysts a few weeks ago, Strategist, and the guy was reporting on, here's what I see now on political stuff in Washington, and he stopped and he said, this is a live seminar, Zoom call, and he said, now, by the way, I'm serious about this. If this changes while I'm making this speech, come tell me. Stop me, because it's happening so fast that nobody can keep up with it just about. So some post-election choppiness is normal. This, to me, is beyond normal right now. Earnings estimates have been elevated. Q4 guidance was lowered. We started at people saying, well, 14% earnings per share growth next year. That was pretty well the consensus in December. Then dropped to 9.4, and now it's continuing to fall. It looks like it's going to be lower, and people that are running the corporations are reluctant to stick their foot out there because it might get chopped off because, hey, this situation is changing very rapidly. So the GDP growth, again, has been downgraded. Earnings per share estimate, maybe 7.25 now instead of 14, which is what it was in December. That requires an extreme recalibration. So if we take the best case scenario is we don't have a recession. We have one negative quarter of GDP. The textbook definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP. And it could still be a mild recession. But the bottom line is if we have two quarters in a row, that is technically a recession. But going from 14% expected earnings growth for the S&P 500 to 7.25, that's a pretty big drop.
Well, I'd just like to remind our listeners, we were actually brought this up back in Q4 multiple times, that the projections being at 14, even up to 16% at that time,
right,
just seemed astronomical. So what we were looking at, what we were worried about, to come into fruition, they were way high.
Yep. And so if you look at the short term, again, the other issue is, and it's going to be interesting to see what Powell says today, the inflation is not going down to 2%. You know, that's their supposed target, which I think is, I think that's not a good idea to have a target that low, because I think that target, I think the 2% inflation we experienced in the previous decade was an anomaly. That was after a massive deflationary crash after 2008. I don't think we get back there this decade. So inflation had a huge surge, then it's tailed off and it's come back down. Again, from a consumer's perspective, they don't care if it's rising at 3% a year. They look at the number. Okay, I was paying $100 for this good. Now it's $125, and my wages have not kept up for that. That's how the consumer views inflation. The financial markets look at, oh, well, it's wonderful. We've gone from, you know, 7 or 9%, whatever it was, down to 3. Hallelujah, happy days are here again. Well, that's not the way the consumers view it. And consumers, again, are close to 80% of the economy if you take what businesses spend that are directly related to consumers. Consumer spending, by the way, is, you know, right at 70% of the economy. Businesses will not spend if consumers aren't spending, though, and that's another 10%. So right now, you have to watch. You've got the Fed on the agenda. We'll see. By the time you're listening to the show, that will already be in fact. But the stocks above the 200-day moving average continues to fall, and the long-term trend, and again, I'll be working on this newsletter. I'd like to get it done on Monday. We will see. It just keeps part of the problem, besides other things in life happening, is just the situation, again, is just changing so rapidly. By the time I get it close to finished, then a whole bunch of change happens, and it's just, wait a minute. Now, I can't say that now. If you look at the longer-term trend, and we'll have a chart in here on in the newsletter on shorter-term trends, and we'll also have some on the longer-term trends. If you look at the longer-term trends for the stock market, basically it still looks like stocks are very overvalued, number one. And number two, you could make the case it's bubble territory, number one. And number two, it looks like it's going to be coming back down. So at some point in time, the old saying is trees don't grow to the sky. You know, at some point, you shoot the arrow in the air, it has an apex and it turns over. It looks to me like we may have hit that apex for this cycle with the market. Now, Trump's not going to like that. President Trump's not going to like that at all if that turns out to be the case. But I don't see, at the speed he's going, he is like a torpedo. It's full speed ahead, and, you know, what's that old World War II saying? Damn, the torpedo's full speed ahead kind of thing. But right. Anyway, he's kind of like that. He's like, okay, we're going to go do this.
I do think he understands that there's going to be some short-term pain
with some of the stuff he's doing. And Bessette, who's the Secretary of Treasury, made the comment to that effect. But the issue here is, you know, don't underestimate when you lose the momentum. Dandy Don, Monday Night Football, gazillion years ago, momentum. And he would always
say,
Big Mo. He always had the thing about momentum and, you know, turn out the lights, the party's over at the end of the game when it's clear one team has won. Big Mo, when you lose your economic momentum to the upside and you start the economic momentum reversing and going to the downside, it's difficult to reverse. Once it gets started with positive momentum, then it's self-reinforcing. Once it gets started with negative momentum, it becomes self-reinforcing as well. And right now, the unemployment rate is not reflecting, really, the potential DOGE layoffs that are coming or the number of those, nor is it reflecting the people. Again, it's kind of like a string of dominoes. You start one domino falling and it hits the other ones. You're going to have a successive move. If you just lay off a whole bunch of employees, again, the stated goal is to reduce government spending by 14%. That is a huge, huge cut to the economy, and the number of people involved is going to be significant. And so on the one hand, if you're looking at it from the very long-term perspective, what America has to do, it's got a budget crisis that it cannot fix without these kind of cuts. So I would agree with both of them, and Elon Musk made the statement. He said, look, if we continue spending money and running up deficits as big as we are now, the federal government's headed for bankruptcy. Well, that's absolutely true. So on the one hand, this is like a surgery that has to take place in order to save the patient's life. That's what we're facing. In the short run, though, surgery is not fun to recover from. I've had a few of them myself. And you're sick for a long time. It takes you quite a bit of while to recover. But that's what I think we're looking at today, and that's what I think the market's going to be looking at in the future. So the bottom line is, may you live in interesting times, the old Chinese proverb. But it looks like to me we're starting a contraction that's going to be more meaningful than I think most people are anticipating.
So I would encourage you, if you haven't looked at our website yet, cornerstonereport.com. That's cornerstonereport.com. You can go look at Jerry's newsletter for September. It's up there, and you can see what we're saying. His concerns about a possible recession. This was before Trump was elected. We got the Trump bump. But some of those things are coming back into play. And so that will also give you a place to go find our new newsletter once it becomes available. Again, he hopes to finish writing it early next week. Then we need to send it through compliance, make sure things looks good to them, and then we can get it up there for you. So hopefully next week we'll give you an update if it's available or not. So again, cornerstonereport.com. Again, really like it when he puts up his new newsletters because it gives you a chance to see what we're talking about. You can. It's hard to imagine some of these charts on radio, but now you can go see it for yourself, and you can make a decision on how important you think it is or the probability that it may come to fruition or not. That's why a lot of times his titles are like, you decide. We're trying to give you both sides so that you are informed. But I also want to encourage you, if you want an investment advisor who takes all this into consideration, looks at the macroeconomics, look at the markets, and adjusts the portfolio accordingly, we'd encourage you to give us a call for a free consultation. You can reach us at 1-800-327-4285. That's 1-800-327-4285. It's not a pressure sale at all. We're not trained that way. We just want to get to know you, get to know us. If it seems like a good fit, we'll keep moving forward. If not, we'll wish you well and encourage you to keep listening so you can stay informed. And just as a reminder, since I'm on this topic, you can also catch our show on podcasts now, especially on Spotify, Amazon, and Apple.
That's right. Tell your friends about that. You may have friends that are not in the area, but might be interested in our show. Some of our best clients were referrals from other people listening to the show. So yep. It'd be good timing.
All right, Jerry. So we talked quite a bit about stocks. We talked a little bit about, the economy too. I'm just kind of going through our little list. What other information would you like to focus on?
Yeah, I just think that a little bit more on the economy, and then we're going to probably jump back into, we're talking, and I haven't done this in years, but we're talking about the outlook for gold and mm-hmm. why we think it's an outstanding investment at this point. And I'm not a gold bug, never have been, other than maybe in my early years in the early 1980s. But the bottom line is the world has changed. And so we want to explain how that's going on. And all the geopolitical issues, really since 2008, in the old days, I still remember the Keynesians, because I'm not a Keynesian, I'm a monetarist out after the cut after the cloth of Milton Friedman. And so he was famous for pinning inflation and the culprit of inflation. Nobel Prize winning economist, in my opinion, the most important economist the last 100 years. Then he went out and undid a whole lot of the extreme liberal thinking which had dominated essentially the academic community on the economic side all the way until he came out with his book, and then PBS did a big series on him, and then Reagan and Thatcher came out and endorsed everything he was doing, and it just changed the whole world. But the bottom line is, for years, the more liberal economists scoffed at gold. They're like, "What? Yeah, you might as well buy a pet rock," kind of stupid stuff like that. But what's been happening is after 2008, and we're going to cover more of this in the second half of the show, after 2008, all the governments of the world kind of realized, hey, I don't know, maybe we ought to have something more than a paper money system or a computerized money system. Maybe we do need something tangible like gold. And yes, it doesn't produce any income. It doesn't pay dividends. But land is a tangible asset. Land does not produce income or dividends unless you're farming it or having somebody farm it. So that doesn't necessarily rule it out, that it's not a good investment. And so what you're seeing, especially the smaller countries of the world, smaller in terms of their GDP, I guess, that would not include China, number two in the world, but essentially what we used to refer to as emerging markets, they're on the gold bandwagon in a big way, and they've got big numbers. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in the second half of the show.
Well, even China and Russia are now, too.
Yep.
And we'll get into those details.
Here's where I'm seeing the economy. So again, it looks like, without question, we're now appear to be in a contraction for the economy in Q1. And as we said, the fires in Los Angeles, the massive winter storms, all that will have a negative impact on the economy, but there's more to it than that. We've got the higher tariffs that we're looking at. The cuts in government spending, as I said a moment ago, are not just cutting the amount of people work for the government directly. It's also going to have ripples or waves that, okay, if the guy loses his job at the government and can't pay his bills anymore, he's got to cut back. He may go to the dry cleaners less. He may cut down from steak to, you know, tuna fish or whatever the case is. There are ripples throughout the economy when you lay that many people off, and we still don't have any idea how many people are going to be laid off. We're also seeing immigration and deportation. How big is that going to be? I don't have any idea. You know, I know it's if Trump holds to his word, it's going to be big. Okay, so you're going to have fewer people available for the labor supply. That also means, so on the one hand, you could make the case, okay, for people in the United States that have a job, having fewer people compete with them for a job ought to boost your wages. Okay, that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, though, is if they're not here, they are not spending money here. And if they're not spending money here, that weakens the whole economy, because even though they're illegals, then they're still spending money at your local grocery store or whatever the case is. So the cut down, the deportations net-net at the end of the day are contractionary for the economy. They're not expanding the economy. So cutting government spending is contractionary. Cutting jobs is contractionary. The higher tariffs, that's going to be inflationary in the short run. In the long run, it's hard to make the case they have a huge impact, other than hopefully they will rebalance the trade. And I understand what Trump's trying to do there, and I don't disagree with him on that. It's people, for years and years and years, president after president after president, they more or less let the other countries of the world, you know, kind of pass tariffs however they want to toward the United States. And nobody held them to account. Nobody made them, wait a minute, if you're going to pass this tariff on us, we're going to pass a tariff on you. So Trump made a statement in his previous administration, which I really liked. He said, you want free trade? Okay, let's do free trade. That means no tariffs for anybody. We don't have tariffs and they don't have tariffs. And of course, that's not going to happen because the other countries will not cooperate. So it's going to produce higher inflation in the long run, increasing material costs and so forth like that. So this is, Michael, this is the definition of what we call stagflation.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we had in the 1970s. Alan Greenspan, back in 2017, made the case. And when I saw the quote, I clipped it and I said, we're going to put this in all of our presentations going forward. He said, the next decade will not be like the one we're in now, because from 2008 to 2020, we had a deflationary undertow for the whole economy. The velocity of money had slowed radically, and the inflation was permanently very low, not permanently forever, permanently for that decade. And so the growth was just anemic. Yeah, we got growth, but it was weak, very weak historically. Greenspan made the statement. He said, the next decade will not be like this decade at all. The next decade will be like a decade we haven't seen since the 1970s. Stagflation. What does that mean? That means slower economic growth with coupled with rising inflation. That's the definition of stagflation. So we're now seeing government layoffs, and these are now the layoffs. We're seeing it starting in the government sector, but we're beginning to see announcements in the private sector in response to this. The Challenger, which is one of the companies that surveys different corporations, layoff plans at this point, now these are plans, not actual people yet, but plans to lay off people. It's the highest since 2009. What was going on in 2009?
Our great financial crisis.
The great financial crisis. We're talking about 172,000 in the most recent layoff, but jumping up to 222, but looks like that's not even close to where it will top out. We don't see a top in place yet. So the government sector is also pushing the private sector and the nonprofits and the contractors and the small businesses. Now small business hiring is tanking. Small businesses had the biggest spike that I've ever seen when Trump got reelected. Rightfully so.
Yeah, they were ecstatic.
They were. But short-term pain, long-term gain is obviously Trump's plan, because he's not going to let this stuff go in slowly or gradually. And so, again, you're going to have some economic disruptions. Typically, the people that are citing, again, the layoff plans, not layoffs that have happened yet, but the Challenger survey on the layoff plans by corporation being the highest since 2009, the main reason they cited for the layoffs was Doge. So you've got weakness in the labor market that's brewing. Latest ADP survey is coming. The numbers are coming down. And again, so what is likely to happen, let's hope nothing happens with the March 14th government shutdown, which to me is just an idiotic charade every year that they do this. But the bottom line is it looks like we're going into more of a stagflationary environment. Inflation is not coming back down easily. It's starting to creep back up again. Mm-hmm. But it looks like to me, and I remember when I was an undergraduate studying at UT Arlington, back Milton Friedman kind of days, they said, I remember the student instructor was there. He was a graduate student. He said, you know, the economists used to think that you couldn't have rising inflation and a layoff and, you know, unemployment rising at the same time. Then it happened in 1974. Right. They had invented a new term called stagflation. You can have rising unemployment and rising prices simultaneously. That looks like where we're headed.
All right, we'd like to take another just short break to remind you that you can learn more about Cornerstone Financial Services at our website, cornerstonereport.com, cornerstonereport.com. And again, at the site, you can catch up on previous radio shows if you missed any. You can see previous interviews. Again, our recent interviews, we had EPB President Eric Basmajian. Did a great job explaining how he looks at the business cycle and how that impacts the economy. And then we also have Matt Gerken of BCA Research, who gave us an update on the geopolitical tensions going on in the world, focusing on Iran and Israel, Russia, Ukraine, and China. Even though, you know, right now the Taiwan situation isn't at the front burner compared to the other two, it's still a big thing going long
term. A bigger deal.
So you can catch those on our website, cornerstonereport.com, or on the previous podcast where you like to grab your podcasts. If you'd like to reach out for a free consultation, again, want an investment advisor who looks at the economy, looks at the markets, and adjusts their portfolios for the clients accordingly, give us a call at 1-800-327-4285. It's 1-800-327-4285. And again, I'd like to remind you, we're not heavy salespeople. We're not going to pressure you. We'll just get to know you, want to let you get to know us better. Because if it's not a good fit, it doesn't make sense to move forward. Your finances are very personal, and so you need to be very comfortable with who you're working with. So again, if you want to reach out, it's 1-800-327-4285. Well, Jerry, last week we did kind of the history of gold,
right?
How gold came about to be money, how it ended up transitioning to the paper currency, up to about, I want to say, well, we got about the 60s or 70s,
right?
What happened then. And so we want to just kind of top off that history, maybe just a quick reminder, and then move into your outlook for gold.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this. I'm going to take a bunch of material from the special report that seems to never die. It's like, okay, I think I started this special report about a month ago, and it's just like at some point, it's strange how this has worked out in the past. There's been a couple of times in my life where trying to get a special report done, and I'm doing everything. It reminds me of kind of when a woman's trying to give birth, you know, push, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And I just stopped about 2 weeks ago. I said, okay, I don't know what's going on. There must be something about to change. And I just, whatever I do, it doesn't matter. I cannot get this special report done. So I just put it on hold for a little while. And of course, things have changed pretty radically just in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, the S&P 500 was hitting an all-time high Wednesday of 2 weeks ago. And now we're breaking the 200-day moving average, and the whole world looks like it's changed. So anyway, I haven't done a lot on gold in recent years, and I think it deserves it because I think we need to talk a little bit more. A lot of people don't understand gold. People thought, oh, why would you want to own gold? Well, there's a lot of reasons. We mentioned, and I'll just give a brief thumbnail sketch of some of the things I mentioned last week in case you didn't get that show. But the bottom line is gold has always been money. The cavemen really didn't trade rocks in order to, you know, facilitate trade. Gold has always been, it's scarce, it's portable. Those are two of the things that normally make it attractive as money. The problem, again, as we mentioned last week, is that portability works great, but if you're a noble in Robin Hood's England and you get on the highway and the highwaymen come after you, they can steal your gold. So what happened was, and they copied some of this from Marco Polo, because Marco Polo saw the Chinese invent paper money. The bottom line is they had the idea in Europe, so you'd say, okay, look, we're going to store your gold for you. You're smiling.
Well, I was just thinking, because He fell into the trap many, many people do. He only saw a portion of time of what they were doing. He didn't see the whole picture.
No, he didn't. And he didn't see the fact that the emperor that was printing all this paper money with no backing was going to lose his head in about a couple of decades. So what happened is they had rampant hyperinflations again and again and again in China, which is what we're hoping doesn't happen here, which is what we hope Doge will get us back on track to a sustainable budget. But I still have big concerns, as we know, about the baby boomer generation with welfare, not with welfare, but with Social Security and Medicare and all that in the next decade. I don't think that's a crisis for this decade, but I think it will be a really big one next decade.
I interrupt you when you're kind of reminding us about him going over to China.
He went to China and he discovered paper money. And then, of course, that was around 1200 AD, if I remember right. And then, of course, he brought the idea back. The European bankers sort of I think they figured out people are not stupid. They're really not going to trust paper money. So they started out as gold storage. So they would store your gold for you in the vault. You don't have to worry about Robin Hood taking your gold away when you're going around with, he's with his merry men and all that kind of stuff. And so, but pretty soon people went, that's a lot of trouble. I got to go down to the gold guy's storage place, pick up my gold. Here's my certificate for the gold. Give me my gold back. Then they go to whatever they're going to buy a house somewhere, let's say. They go over to where they're going to buy the house, and what do? They hand them the gold. Say, okay, here's payment. Now give me a receipt, and we got the transactions done. Well, guess what the guy that got the gold for the sale of the house, he would take it back to the gold merchant and then get another receipt. So what they discovered is after a little while, it didn't take real long, people stopped going, it's a lot of trouble to go get the gold and then bring it to somebody else. Plus, you could get robbed on the way. So people just started trading the certificates after a while. Thus, that's how we have fiat currency. But back then, it was supposedly backed by gold. And that worked fine until the gold merchants figured out that at no one time did, this is the beginning of fractional reserve banking in America, and it started in Europe, really, but they said at no one time does all the gold ever get called. Maybe you get 10% of the gold called every month or whatever, but most of it just sits here gathering dust in my vault, and these people are just trading the certificates. So they figured out, hey, we can print extra certificates, and no one will know the better. So they were creating money out of thin air, and then they got wealthy doing that until, again, it caught up to them. Because after a while, it's inevitable. If you're going to print more of anything, print more money, it's going to cause inflation to take off. And that's essentially the root cause of inflation in America. It starts with budget deficits. The government spends more than it takes in. It will then have to, issue treasuries to cover that. And then that, of course, is really essentially the root cause. The budget deficit is the root cause of how inflation takes off. It's a little bit more complicated process than I've made it sound right here. But the bottom line is, if we keep spending and keep spending and keep spending money that we don't have, then the government, the Treasury Department, has to keep issuing certificates and certificates and certificates of the U.S. Treasury. And as long as we are the reserve currency of the world and everybody trusts America, because again, the dollar used to be backed by gold. Then it was not. Nixon cut us off of the gold backing in 1971 when he closed the gold window. So the issue is the U.S. dollar is backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which in normal times, under normal conditions, that's a big deal.
But it really means it's backed by us, because it's backed by taxation.
It's backed by trust and taxation, right. People trust it, so they trust the dollar. Now, the issue is, if government spending ever gets out of control and the budget deficits just run completely away with us, which we're on the verge of getting to that point where there's no return at some point. It's why Elon Musk said, we're headed for bankruptcy if we don't turn the government spending around. Well, he's right. The government is, not the rest of the world or the rest of the country per se. But the bottom line is you can't keep it growing forever. So here's where I think we are. I think that this downturn in the economy that looks like it's starting is, just imagine this as basically, okay, if I have to have surgery, if I have a cancer tumor in my system that's growing and I have to go have it cut out, that's going to make me pretty uncomfortable for a little while. The recovery time is going to have to be there. I'm going to be sick in the recovery process from that. That, to me, is kind of a good analogy of what's going on with the government right now. This Doge thing, if we don't cut all the waste and corruption out, it destroys us in the long run. But in the short run, there's going to be some pain involved. So I think that the pain that we've just, I just think we're just now starting the pain. I think it's going to get worse. So if you look at the history, let's talk about gold as an investment now, instead of just as a store of value. Historically speaking, and we got a chart on, right now it's on page 5, but that chart page could change, that shows the long-term relationship between the dollar and gold. And most of the history of the dollar and gold, they allowed gold, they turned gold loose in 1974-ish, where Americans could own it again because it was illegal after the Great Depression. FDR confiscated all the gold from everybody in America, paid them $25 for a $20 gold piece. Everybody, 90% of the people cooperated, and then he promptly raised the official price to $35 an ounce. The problem is he kept it at 35 an ounce from 1933 until 1973-ish, and then by then the Europeans are getting wise. They're going, wait a minute. Inflation's gone up a whole lot over that 40 years. We can take a bunch of our, we can use our currency and buy a bunch of their gold at $35 an ounce. What a great deal. So that wasn't going to work. We lost, estimates are, and again, it's going to be interesting if they go out at Fort Knox, but estimates are we lost maybe a third of our gold because foreigners were buying it with their currencies because they recognized it was an extreme bargain. Then they allowed the gold to free float. But the issue is the relationship between gold and the dollar historically have been inverse, meaning when you have a period where the dollar is strengthening, real strong currency like we had under Reagan, the dollar was going straight up. Everybody loved Reagan. They loved what he was doing with the economy and loved what he was doing politically. The dollar had a bull market. Then the dollar has a bear market. Now, if you compare it to something like the Swiss franc, it's been in a bear market for 40 years. If you compare it to other currencies, not necessarily. So
it being?
Pardon?
It being?
The dollar. So okay. In other words, the dollar, if you chart the dollar versus the Swiss franc for the last 40 years, it's a bouncing ball going down the stairs. It's just down lower and lower and lower. If you chart it against other currencies, that's not the case. So the dollar's had periods of time where it surges up to great strength, and then it weakens and it surges, and most of that is related to differentials in interest rates that they pay in the various countries. So in other words, if the Canadian dollar, to pick on a country that's not on our wish list right now, if the Canadians are paying 5% on their government treasuries and we're paying 4, the differential is in favor of the Canadian, that would tend to make the Canadian dollar stronger. Now, there's more to it than that, but just the interest rate differential has a big play on what the dollar, whether the dollar's strong or weak. Now, again, if you look at the history, we got a chart in here on currently on page 5 that shows when you have a bull market in the dollar and a bear market in the dollar, another bull market in the dollar, something shifted after 2008. Shifted radically, which is one of the reasons we think gold deserves a place in your portfolio. And again, we're not going to be a gold bug and say you have 50% of your money in gold or whatever, but I just think it makes a lot of sense, especially with the stats we're coming up with. So essentially, right after 2008, it really started around 2011, the dollar went back into a bull market and gold did too, which essentially we had never had that happen. Okay, now let me give you some statistics. I'm going to read directly from the newsletter. This is a quote from Alpine Macro from last year, but it's still a great quote. The problem with gold is there's a very limited amount of gold to be purchased in the global markets, and these huge financial institutions like the Chinese Central Bank, the Indian Central Bank, and so forth are sucking all of the available supply up that the gold mining companies of the world can produce, and then some. Central banks were net sellers of gold in the 3 decades following the collapse of the Bretton Woods system. So in other words, after 1944, the central banks were selling gold. That's when, you know, the Keynesians would go, oh, it's useless. It doesn't pay dividends and it doesn't, there's no interest from it. And it's, you know, it's better than not much better than a pet rock. And I'm like, I just laughed at them. I'm like, excuse me, that sounds prideful. But anyway, I'm like, you just don't get it. You know, you don't get it. Anyway, so they were net sellers. However, this reversed course after the great financial crisis, rebuilding their bullion reserves to the tune of 7,800 tons. Now, gold, 7,800 tons, that is a lot of gold. Think of a gold. A ton is 2,000 pounds, mm-hmm. You know, a normal ton. I'm not talking metric, but anyway, the bottom line is that's a lot of gold, 7,800 tons. Notably, more than a quarter of these acquisitions, though, have occurred in just the last 2 years. Really, this, again, was a 24 article, so it would be from 22 on. And why? because Russia got their financial reserves confiscated both in the EU and in America when he invaded Ukraine, when Putin invaded Ukraine. So now not only is it a hedge against economic chaos, it's also a hedge against geopolitical chaos. And these countries probably be like, oh, wow, they froze their money, so maybe we need to own some more gold. That's kind of what they're doing. That's how they're responding to this stuff. So it really, the ownership of gold hyper-escalated after Russia invaded Ukraine. Because, again, both the U.S. and EU froze all the Russian assets that were being held in the U.S. or Europe. So the bottom line is, if you look at the charts, we're going to have these charts on in the newsletter. Currently, they're on page 6, although it could change. It shows China and India and the amount of gold they were buying back in 2000, ratcheting up, ratcheting up, ratcheting up, and then shooting up after 2020. Gold reserves for Singapore, same story. Gold reserves for Russia, same story. The BRICS, Singapore, all those countries, the amount of gold going is going up and up and up. So what's happened is anytime there's a war, people realize, hey, the value of gold is something I need to keep. Now, I'm reading this from, again, Alpine Macro. This is the March 11th, 24 issue. The market value of the gold stock in the world, that means not gold mining stocks, but the amount of gold that is owned in the world, total gold value in the world, is about $13 trillion, of which almost half is in the form of jewelry. So I wouldn't even count that. People, they're not going to turn their jewelry in to make money out of it, typically. That's not normally going to happen. Only $3 trillion is being held of private investors as tradable financial asset that is potentially available for these central banks to buy. So you got about $3 trillion that is available. But the market cap of stock market is $250 trillion for stocks and bonds versus $3 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of pneumatic pressure? You ever see one of those bulldozers that gets out there with the big claw? And how does this one guy with these two little levers dig up a humongous pile of dirt? It's pneumatic pressure. It's, you know, there's an intense pressure being exerted by the fluid that goes through that arm of that thing that goes in down into the bucket. So when you're in a situation where there's just an enormous disparity between the potential demand for something, $250 trillion in bonds and stocks versus $3 trillion maybe available, that's a huge disparity. They've done surveys. This is from Alpine Macro and the World Gold Council. Percentage of respondents, they were primarily talking to countries here, countries. How many of you want to own gold? What's the reason for holding gold? Back in 2019, it was about 15% of them cited, yeah, geopolitical concerns are a reason that I want to own gold. That was about 15% in 2019. In 2023, it jumped to 50%. 50% of the big central banks. Now, keep in mind, you and I are not going to be able to buy enough gold to affect the market. That will affect the market because there's a supply and demand issue there. But considering that compared to these giant gorillas, these are humongous financial institutions. And you can see the net central bank purchases of gold that spiked after Russia invaded Ukraine. So the bottom line is it's something that, again, I don't want to sound like a gold mania guy, because some of those guys are crooks, frankly. Some of those guys are exaggeration. It's not a regulated industry. You know, the things that I can and cannot say on this radio show are heavily scrutinized, and I have to fit all of, you know, square peg, square hole, cross my T's, dot my I's. If I mess up, sometimes we have to edit the stuff, but that happens very rarely. But the bottom line is they can get on television or radio or ads or wherever and pretty well say anything they want to, whether it's truthful or exaggeration or what. So the bottom line is what we're seeing is, again, another move toward increasing this. So why am I saying this? I'm not saying this as a short-term speculation. I'm not saying I think you ought to buy gold as a short-term speculation. I'm not saying that. And frankly, I'm not making a recommendation here.
Right, because we don't know your situation.
Yeah, we don't. So I can't make a recommendation according to the rules. The bottom line, though, is I really believe that we're in a bull market for gold that's going to last a long time. It's probably going to last, this current bull market, if I'm guessing, probably last another 2 or 3 years. And it tends to do well. Like in 08, gold beat almost everything out there. It produced the price of gold went down in 08, but not near as much as the market did. So the issue is there's a very small number of amount of gold that floats in the world versus the potential demand for it. And I think if you look further out, if you're willing to look further out, the Central Bank of China has been a key source of central bank gold demand growth. Its share of global central bank gold purchases increased from an average of 3.5% to 22% by November of 22. So between 2017 and 2022, they went from 3.5% of the purchases from central banks to 22% of the amount of gold that was being purchased. So you have monstrous institutions that are doing this. And the reason is, again, if I were looking at why would I want to own gold at all, the bottom line is real simple. Number one, gold's not going to go bankrupt. Number two, if you look at history, and there's not a perfect correlation here, but there's a very strong correlation between inflation and gold. So if you go back in the 70s, now it's been less accurate since the 70s, but if you go back and look at gold in the 70s and you compare the consumer price index, the inflation rate back then, and if you were to plot those on a chart, okay, so you plot the consumer price index up and down, it starts in 1970, relatively low, has a big spike to 74, then goes down, then goes back up again, and you overlay the price of gold against the CPI, consumer price index, or the inflation rate, it's virtual mirror image. So the issue is in the 70s, it was just about a perfect inflation hedge. It hasn't been perfect by any means over the last, you know, since then. But the bottom line is it's now starting to gain a lot of popularity and a lot of demand. And the most recent charts here, I'm showing China as the leader in the world. This, again, this will be in the newsletter. Rising geopolitical tensions could be a reason for higher gold prices. The chart shows the global reserves have risen sharply in recent years. China, Poland, Singapore, even Libya is in the gold buying business. India is just starting. India, by the way, is very pro-gold. It's one of the things that they do before people get married in India is they have to have a dowry for the bride, and it usually has gold, which is usually in the form of jewelry. So anyway, I don't want to make this like a, you know, some of the guys out there, in my view, are kind of like the only tool I have is a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. That's not what we're doing here. What we're saying is I think that my view of the world is this. I think that we are in a temporary lull of inflation for this decade. Again, if you go back to what Alan Greenspan said, so far it's perfectly prophetic as far as I can see. 2017 quote, which I took directly from a source that we've identified in our charts and so forth, he made the statement. He said, the next decade will not be like the decade we're in, which was low inflation and slow economic growth. He said the next decade will be like something we haven't seen since the 1970s, rising inflation, stagflation, slower economic growth with higher inflation. And he said we're going to have a lot of inflation in the next decade. He was talking about 2020 to 2030. I'd say right now he's right on. The bottom line is we are in a lull right now. So inflation has come down from the high. I think it topped out around 9%. It's probably running 3.5%, 4% right now. But the bottom line is I don't think it's going back to 2. Not in my lifetime, not in my professional career. I don't see it going back to 2. It got down to 2 because of an extraordinary period of time of deflation after the Great Crisis in 2008. And I think 3.5-ish is probably the bottom for this. But if you look at and compare the waves, think of the waves in the ocean. If you look at the waves of inflation in the late 60s and 70s, there were 3 waves. And this is an uncanny thing that we got in some of our charts where you see comparing, you know, history doesn't ever repeat itself exactly, but it rhymes is what Mark Twain said. If you look at the waves of inflation, late 60s, early 70s, mid 70s up to 74, and then late 70s, 76 to 80, and you overlay today's inflation rate with it, it's almost like tracing paper. They look almost identical. And you look at it and go, okay, what's going to cause the next wave of inflation? A lot of it's because workers in America, and this is exactly what happened in the 70s, workers in America feel like they're behind the curve. We had a huge surge of prices. If you compound the inflation again, you know, you probably have the average price is probably 25 or 30% higher than it was in 2020. And the workers in America are going, wait a minute, my wages haven't gone up near that much. And they're holding out for higher prices. And we've had labor shortages, gives them the power to do that. So anyway, I think it's going to be a worldwide phenomenon before it's over. I think that the bull market marches on for gold, and we're not even commenting on what might happen after this decade's over, but I think that could be really true hyperinflation. Depends on how they handle the government deficit, but it looks to me like it's going to be difficult to control in the next decade.
Well, I found it also interesting that Ned Davis put out a report this week talking about stagflation.
Yeah, and it's funny because the people that we're quoting all these sources from, they're not gold guys. They're not guys that sell gold. They sell research, typically stocks and bonds. And in this case, all three of our analysts that we're taking are all bullish on gold for mostly the same reasons.
All right, if you'd like to reach out for a free consultation, the number is 1-800-327-4285. Or you can find us at cornerstonereport.com. Jerry Tuma Smart Money is a broadcast of Cornerstone Financial Services of Dallas, Texas. Jerry Tuma is a certified financial planner. Financial advisors at Cornerstone could help you if you prefer to delegate your investment decisions to a financial professional. Securities and advisory services offered through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. Cornerstone Financial Services, an independent financial group, LLC, or unaffiliated entities. We publish a newsletter, Cornerstone Report, which is available on our website or by calling our toll-free number at 800-327-4285. That's also the number to call for more information about anything we've discussed during today's broadcast. For more information, visit our website at cornerstonereport.com. Views and opinions heard on Jerry Tuma Smart Money are not necessarily the opinion of this station or its management or Independent Financial Group, LLC, its affiliates, officers, or directors. Material on this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. Remember, we are aiming to change the way America thinks about investing.